This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is.
Nevermore.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I am Mr. WrestleTalk and I'm joined by Denise Salcedo. Hi, Denise.
Very happy to be here with you today, Mr. WrestleTalk.
Thank you very much for joining us. Let's dive straight into the show because we've got a lot to talk about today, including this rumor, or potential rumor, that Tessa Blanchard may be on her way to WWE and Ricochet apparently not, although we probably think he is. Here is the show.
It has been incredibly busy. I actually started my day off like at 6:30 in the morning, and it has been nonstop all day. I posted an Instagram selfie today, and usually I stick around, see how many likes I get, you know, basic female stuff. And turns out that I completely forgot about it, logged on to Instagram right now, and I was like, wait, why am I getting all of these notifications? That's how busy the day has been. I forgot I even posted a selfie.
First world problems. But also, congratulations to you on your 1 year at Fightful as well. You had your podiversary with Sean this past Monday.
I did, and I completely blew my Blue Chew read. It was horrendous. It was so bad. I wanted to cry.
So funny. So funny. I haven't laughed that much. Like, I really enjoyed that, but I also enjoyed you not being able to say the word sitcom.
Oh my God. Yes. So I said sitcom. And then when Sean was like, I didn't realize what I had said. And he was like, he's pointed it out. And I literally looked at him and I was like, what? I honestly did not realize what I had said. And even afterwards, I had to go on Google search and I was like, how do I say it? And I was like, it's sitcom. And even sitcom. Then I have to put a lot of thought into saying that word. It's horrible. So don't say sitcom.
Yes, don't send your Patreon mailbag questions for next week's show asking Denise to constantly answer questions about sitcoms. Anyway, right, let's dive into the big news from this week. So this is an interesting one to kick us off with here. These images were shared by Tiger Driver. So this is from the new WWE Battlegrounds game that's currently out at the moment. And there's an interesting image that appeared on this, which is this image here. Now, this would seem fairly innocuous. It's just sort of like a little training thing on how to do the Royal Rumble. But down in the bottom right-hand corner here is this image, which is quite clearly Tessa Blanchard. Like, it is the exact same image of Tessa Blanchard from when she won the Impact World title.
Wow.
It's so weird that she is like that. And like the guy who took the photograph, Basil Mahmoud, tweeted out saying, like, you know, like, hey, how is my image being used in this game without my permission? because it's, you know, it is a sketch of the image, and like he wasn't contacted about it, or they weren't contacted about it. So it's just like really bizarre. And it's interesting because Tessa is currently a free agent. You know, she's been rumored that she's going to be going to WWE since she left Impact Wrestling and vacated the title. Now, her addition in the game doesn't mean that she is for sure signed, but we have seen over the years that like wrestlers appearing in the WWE video games has led to them either coming back, or, you know, in the case of like, you know, in the case of Warrior and Angle coming back, in the case of Sting actually signing with WWE.
Yeah, it's very surprising. But first of all, like going back to the photographer, I hope that he gets his, you know, royalties from that, because, you know, we're all starving artists, whether you're a creator and like you're a painter, whether you're a podcast, whatever it is that you're doing, we tend to, you know, struggle a little bit more. So hopefully that all gets resolved for him. But in terms of Tessa Blanchard, I mean, I feel that she would benefit so, so much, not just her, but the entire company, from having Tessa Blanchard on the roster with if she were to go to NXT. I mean, it's Tessa Blanchard. She's arguably the best female wrestler out there. I mean, she's top notch. She is one of the best wrestlers, period. So sort of having her be a part of the NXT roster, I think would be amazing. However, I do think that AEW would need Tessa Blanchard a whole lot more. So even though nothing has been confirmed, I really do think that wherever Tessa Blanchard ends up, it's really going to depend on her attitude and how she's feeling at, you know, that current state and time.
I was going to say, yeah, like with Blanchard does come the baggage of signing a Tessa Blanchard, because she has got a lot of, like, you know, backstage heat with some people. There were a lot of things that were written and said about her when she won the Impact title, and those haven't really gone away. Like, they are sort of like, they will probably be with her for a long time. But recently, we did our Patreon podcast, which actually went live today, myself and Mr. Davis reviewing All In from 2018. And in that four-way, where it's Blanchard, Chelsea Green, Madison Rain, and Britt Baker, like Blanchard is the star of that foursome. Like, she is, like, she just feels like on a complete different level to everyone else. And it's funny, like, the, you know, the rumors this year were that she was going to be signed by WWE, but straight onto the main roster and like put into this big program with Charlotte. And they were talking about, you know, WrestleMania programs for her, and like, you know, pushing her as like the next big thing in their women's division. So I can see WWE making a big, big play for Tessa Blanchard. And I think it's interesting then that she has kind of featured in a way in this new game.
And yeah, you know, we've all heard the stories about Tessa Blanchard, but who's to say, you know, people change, people grow. Maybe she has a new perspective on things. We don't know. And obviously all of the social media stuff that happened to her, not that happened to her, because obviously they were justified based on the stories that we heard, but it is sort of that thing where it's like, well, how do you shake something like that off? It's not something you can get rid of, but it would, you know, the thing that you mentioned about Tessa Blanchard standing out to you from all the women, I honestly feel like it doesn't, you look at her wrestle and she doesn't wrestle like every other female out there. She has a very different dynamic when it comes to how she goes into the ring. Just everything she does comes with a different type of intensity and a different type of, I don't even know, like this presence that she brings into each move that she does. And if she were to go to WWE, I definitely see her. I mean, yeah, she would do amazing things in NXT, but I can definitely see them, you know, saying like, hey, like she's a main roster person. Let's put her up there, because she's one of those women that would have phenomenal matches with Charlotte Flair, Asuka. I mean, you name it, pretty much every female on that roster. And they have so many women right now, and they can do so many different matchups. So Tessa Blanchard is a win-win.
Yeah, and actually to echo what you said earlier in regards to her going to AEW, like, you know, I think AEW would love to have someone like Blanchard on there, because they do need some, yeah, unfortunately, they do need some star presence in their women's division. And it's, you know, the report came out yesterday from Sean Rossap over on Fightful Select that the match between Ivelisse and Thunder Rosa on this week's Dynamite actually was like, it was legit fighting at one point, because Thunder Rosa was like laying in her punches because she wants to make the, you know, protect the NWA and make the NWA titles feel important. But Ivelisse started to no sell it because she thought that she was starting to stiff her and stuff. And apparently there was like a backstage altercation between them. So like I think like their women's division almost like if I mean I don't know what the point I'm trying to make here is, but like Eva Lise is there at the moment, and she is someone who comes with her own baggage, and like she is always like everyone has always said like Eva Lise is an incredible talent, but she is her own worst enemy. Like, do you then want to add Tessa Blanchard into that mix? I hope that you know that Tessa has come the other side of this as a better person. But
here's the thing, though, and not to like make this go extra long, but here's the thing, though, when someone is that good, like Tessa Blanchard, don't you sort of, I mean, depending on the person, work up some sort of like, you know, ego where if someone tells you do this and you're like, no, I'm too good for that. If anything, that's kind of I kind of see that as a pro. I mean, not always, but that the match with Eva Lise and Thunder Rosa, that was very interesting because that match, I was most drawn to Eva Lise, and when Thunder Rosa went for the tombstone, I noticed that it took her a really long time to sort of set it up to the point where it was very noticeable, and you know, it kind of took me away from the match for a second. So I definitely am very, like, you know, not surprised, but it is very interesting to hear that all of this went down in the match. So who knows what that trigger point was.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, everyone was sharing that GIF yesterday of the moment when she was locking the arms when she was sat down, and someone brilliantly described it as like trying to get your 5-year-old to put on their clothes when they're acting up, and you're trying to get them to go to school.
That's hilarious. That's well said.
Right, so the other big bit of news is that earlier in this week, WrestleVotes tweeted, I can't reveal the name as that's not smart business, but I can very confidently say that a certain WWE talent has decided not to re-sign with the company once their current deal expires. And Rovert then reported that name was Ricochet. However, Ricochet himself has tweeted a GIF from the Wolf of Wall Street where he's going, I'm not going anywhere, and then replied, but seriously, where the hell did these rumors start? I've never said once that I'm leaving to anyone. So these dirt sheets out there, maybe fact checks before you blast some trash on your website for some clicks. So yeah, according to this, Ricochet is not the man who's on his way out.
See, here's the thing about that. Whenever I see a guy or a talent basically say like, oh, you're wrong. Yeah, a lot of times people are wrong. But for the most part, I've seen that a lot of the guys who say, oh, this rumor is wrong, it ends up being right, like most of the time. So because he said that, it's kind of like, okay, I respect you and all, but I'm now leaning more towards the fact that you may actually, you know, be leaving. But in terms of Ricochet, you know, unfortunately, you know, he's a very, very athletic guy, very talented, can do these crazy things with his body. But the thing is that in WWE, he's already been slotted. Where he's at right now, I can't see them, you know, pushing him any further or, you know, sort of getting him in a different spot on the roster. He's already kind of where I think they think his potential is. So, I mean, if you're not happy, might as well, you know, you don't have to stay. You can go and do whatever else you want, especially right now when you're at the age that you could still do it, when your body can still do it. And I mean, he would be fantastic. And not just AEW, but New Japan Pro Wrestling. I mean, AEW isn't the only option out there. So I think that if he's, you know, not creatively fulfilled, but if he's just not fulfilled in the company, then by all means, go and try something else, try something new. And, you know, watching Raw every single week, like Ricochet hasn't had really, I mean, maybe last week was like the biggest moment that he's had where he was going, you know, cutting this great promo on Cedric Alexander and the Hurt Business. But besides that, we really haven't been able to see much of him. And it's unfortunate because he's that guy where, you know, you put him out in front of children or in front of fans, new fans, casual audiences, they see him wrestle and everybody's like, this guy is great. And the guys that can get those oohs and ahs really end up working well for the company because people like that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, he's a guy that they labeled him with the superheroes can be real gimmick. Like, that was his thing. He was saying it in like every promo. It's like, I'm going to go out there and prove that superheroes can be real. And so I'm going to put that out there. I thought that was a dumb, dumb phrase to put on someone. It made him sound like a dumb, dumb person. With that said, he is a real life superhero and he can literally go out there and he can be like, as you said, like kids just like gravitate towards him because he's got this presence about him. He looks cool. He sounds cool. He's got a cool sounding name. He's got cool entrance music without the gun sound effect. And then he goes out there and does these amazing like flips and stuff. And he just feels awesome. And it's a real shame that his career in WWE outside of NXT has just been, you are small. Like that is what we're labeling you as. You are small. You got to go and have your WWE championship match with Brock Lesnar at the Saudi Arabia show, but it's going to go 10 seconds and you're not going to get any offense in whatsoever.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, when he was teaming with Cedric, they could have easily marketed their tag team to be somebody like the Hardy Boys, where they're that extreme team, you know, obviously not identical to the Hardy Boys, but they could have given them that, you know, these are the high flyers of the company. Like, you never know what crazy things they're going to do when they're out there. And so they could have been marketed a lot differently, I think.
Yeah, like Kendrick and London, you know, just sort of like.
Yes, there you go.
Of that team, and like, you know, they got really over in an era when like WWE hated tag team wrestling. I mean, they still hate tag team wrestling now, but like when Kendrick and London held the belts for like 5 years or something and no one ever really cared about the title, right? But kids really liked the team and, you know, really popped for them. To also echo your point as well, as soon as Ricochet said, yeah, it's definitely not me, I've no idea where these dirt sheets are getting their reports from, I was like, oh, it probably is you though, isn't it, Ricochet? Because, like, you know, lest we forget, FTR on the Talk Is Jericho podcast admitted that they were also being those guys who were just like, it's not us. We don't want to leave. We don't want to go to AEW. And then we're like, yeah, but really, we were already asking for our release because we wanted to go to AEW.
Wow. You see, I don't believe it. I just don't. You can't fool me, okay? And also, like, I sometimes get, like, when, you know, it's a very popular thing to sort of attack the dirt sheets. And if you think about it, like, that's, I almost feel like wrestling is really, like, the only place where you see the talent attack the dirt sheets. And I almost feel like there are dirt sheets, I get it. But there are so many other media outlets that, you know, they're not dirt sheets. They're reporting the best that they possibly can. And maybe I'm biased because I work for, like, a bunch of them. But, you know. But I just think, like, you know, I really wish that would stop being a thing, because it's like, if this person isn't talking about you, who's going to talk about you? Who's going to talk about what you're doing on the show? Who's going to talk about whether or not you're going to this company or staying here or your contract's here? Like, you know, just Jared isn't going to do that. There's got to be somebody that's focusing on, you know, wrestling.
Absolutely, yeah. There are smart wrestlers out there who really know how to play the dirt sheet game. Like, I think Heyman was very good at that in the 90s. Like, he was effectively feeding Meltzer stories so that Meltzer would report those stories and effectively help other guys. Like, he would say, like, oh, they're having conversations with WCW, WWF read that, and they're like, oh, okay, well, we need to get onto that guy now because apparently he's already having talks with the other company. So there are people who are very smart at playing the game. But yeah, I think there is this almost, yeah, just playing the, I hate the dirt sheets. Dirt sheets are killing the business, this, that, and the other. And, like, if anything, like, the dirt sheets have only ever improved, like, not improved the business, but help, like, grow the business and sort of, like, get the words out. Get them, you know, people like Ricochet and Ospreay, like, that match that they had was helped massively by social media, but also by people like Meltzer and Sean and all these people talking about that match.
Yeah, so I will tell you, when I was at PCW Ultra, like, maybe last year, they did this thing where they had the MC go around and ask people, and this is like a very crowded indie event here in Southern California. They had, you know, the MC go around and ask people, like, hey, how'd you find out about us? Blah, blah, blah. So they put the mic on one guy, and this guy was from, I think he was from Ireland, and they asked him, like, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, Dave Meltzer said that I should check out, you know, PCW Ultra. So I did, and here I am. And I just thought, holy moly, like, that is crazy that, you know, someone's influence can, you know, persuade someone to go check something out. And so you just never know, like, the kind of impact that, you know, these dirt sheets could be having on people. They could go check things out. They can hear, like, oh, this match was really good. It was 5 stars or whatever. Then that person will be like, you know what? I got to check this match out if people are saying it's so good. People got FOMO. You got to feed off the FOMO.
But anyway, point of the story is, we think it's Ricochet. Ricochet's probably leaving, and him denying it probably means it's him.
Yes.
And lastly, before we get into the mailbag, just looking at the viewing figures from the Wednesday Night War, it's the first time in like a few weeks that we've actually had like the Wednesday Night War, because they've been on opposite nights. They've been like, and it's been a while. So AEW won out, 886,000 viewers, obviously, which is down from the million that they did last week. And NXT averaged 689,000 viewers. I can do numbers, which is down 17.8% from running unopposed last Tuesday night. I mean, you talked about this with Luke Owen on a podcast a couple of weeks back, but these have got to go onto different nights. They've got to go onto different nights at this point.
I honestly think it would make my life easier because yesterday was so stressful, like trying to watch AW, NXT, the ACMs. I mean, it was a disaster. It was a disaster because at the end of the day, I had to go back and rewatch something that I had already seen because I didn't get to pay that much attention. And so I don't like watching multiple things at the same time.
No, it's not for me. But, you know, another great week for wrestling. I'm really excited about this NXT, this gauntlet thing. They've got this gauntlet elimination. I think it's going to be a really, really fun little gimmick. And I thought that AEW was a killer show this week. I thought it was a really, really great show. But yeah, my hope is that USA Network will look at these numbers and be like, do you know what? Let's just move it to Tuesday nights. Just put it onto Tuesday. And like you say, God, my life will be so much easier. My life will be so like, and this channel's life will be so much easier. Think about us, WWE. Think about the difficulty that we have trying to cover your product.
Exactly.
Do you like quizzes? Do you like wrestling? Do you like watching self-professed experts in their fields being exposed as dangerous frauds? Then you'll love Quizzlemania, brought to you by Parts Funknown, the team behind acclaimed wrestling RPG No Rolls Barred. Join us every week as four wrestling pundits pit their knowledge against each other in a cerebral wrangle for prizes, glory, and a bit of good old-fashioned escapism. Enjoy the videos live every Wednesday on Parts Funknown's YouTube channel, or subscribe right now to have them beam straight to your mobile device. Quizzlemania, it's the showcase of the Immorons.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Right, let's dive into the mailbag then. If you want to submit a question to the mailbag, all you got to do is become one of our awesome pledge hammers on Patreon at any dollar amount and leave a comment in the community tab. Do not email me. I will just lose it. Bad at my job, like Luke Owen was. And if you are one of our $5 and above backers, you get our all-in podcast that we just did. Me and Mr. Davis for 3.5 hours talked about All In. And fun fact for you, the first hour is just talking about the Wrestling Observer newsletter from the time of its release. We dive into all of the numbers, all of the statistics, how the show came together, all the backstage news and the backstage reports from it. Oh, it was so much fun to revisit. Also, it was my first time seeing that show.
Wow. Yeah. Sounds good.
I know. I was on my honeymoon when it was on, so I didn't see it. By the time I got back, I there was too much stuff for me to do, you know, which is actually the same story that Luke had. And I've only ever seen one match. I've only ever seen Kenny Omega versus Penta. So, like, I'd never seen the whole show. So it was actually really nice last Monday to sit down and watch the show from start to end.
You know what? Believe it or not, you got to have a life outside just watching wrestling.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right, so let's dive into the mailbag. Robert Ray says, my question is, while Vince is still in charge, do you ever think we'll get a Big Four pay-per-view in the UK again? Or is it best we can hope for a super showdown like Australia got a few years ago? I've got a feeling that Vince considers SummerSlam 92 a failure, and that's why the UK never got a big pay-per-view again. As someone who was born in 1996, I never got a chance to go to a WWE pay-per-view. I have since been to NXT. I have hope since NXT did a takeover show in London a few years back, which I missed due to being ill. Leads me to think that Triple H would be open to doing it since he had the takeover from Vince. Would be intrigued to know what Denise thought about someone not living in the UK. Do you think the UK is due a Big Four pay-per-view again?
First of all, I feel very privileged that I don't have to worry about this. But honestly, there's no reason why they can't hold a big pay-per-view there at all, especially because now times have changed. You know, we have the network. I mean, they did a glorified house show in Saudi Arabia. But even then, I think if built right, people will actually go and check it out. And then with SummerSlam 92, it was pre-taped. No one's going to want to watch a pre-taped pay-per-view. It just doesn't mesh well, right? Not mesh well, but people aren't as interested in that. And one of the other things that I was also kind of thinking about too is that, you know, they had the match, British Bulldog, Bret Hart as the main event. And so with that being said, it's like, okay, that match appealed to the audience there for SummerSlam 92. It didn't necessarily appeal to the American audience. So I think that's the fact that it didn't appeal to the American audience, and the fact that people didn't want to watch a pre-taped pay-per-view, I personally think might have led to the numbers not being so great. But again, times are different now. So I think if anything, the show would feel even much more grander because the audience would be completely hot for it. People would be exciting. And I think that they can definitely make it work.
I think they can make it work. I mean, you know, I am a Brit, so I am from the UK. I'm from England. So we hold SummerSlam 92 is a very special place in our hearts. Like, we have held on to this now for the last 28 years. It's just like, it's the greatest SummerSlam ever because it was here. You know, it sold out Wembley Stadium. It was a huge, huge show, British Bulldog. But like, it was part of a very smart plan. It was there for the British invasion they were essentially doing because they had the deal with Sky and they were looking to do the British expansion over here. So I thought it was a really, really interesting show in history, in terms of, you know, the way the history looks at it. But it's, yeah, I don't know if we'll ever get another Big Four here because, like, as you say, like, it's because of the time difference. They can't air it live the same way they do over in the US. Therefore, they have to do it on a tape delay or something like that. And in the age of social media where results are going to get out and this, the other, I can't see them doing a Big Four. I can see them doing a network special. They actually did say they were going to do a network special here, and they sold tickets for it. I know, because I went. but then they did the draft split. Like, they did the draft split, so we just got like a Raw house show. And like, I paid a lot of money for this ticket to just go and see a really bad Raw house show, and it sucked, and I hated it. I was so resentful of going to that show. It was supposed to be a big show, Denise, and it bloody wasn't.
That's really messed up. They swerved you.
They did swerve me, and I was really annoyed about it. Ket says, what's up, WrestleTalk? Is there any Undertaker match at WrestleMania that you think is underrated?
Underrated? Maybe his first match with Kane, WrestleMania 14. I feel maybe that one would be underrated because it was the first time that they had wrestled, and he did the dive, which was really cool. That was a really great moment. But they had a really good build up to this match, and it actually delivered. Like, it wasn't bad whatsoever, but I don't feel that it gets as much love as maybe some of the other ones.
I'm going to go around the same period. I'm going to go with his first match against Triple H at WrestleMania X7.
Like, I think that's my favorite Undertaker WrestleMania match.
But it never gets brought up because he had the two other Mania matches, you know, like the Hell in a Cell and the singles match. And I think everyone always looks out. Granted, it's probably because WWE did tell us those are the only two WrestleMania matches that Undertaker and Triple H had. Where I was like, no, they definitely wrestled at X7. I've seen that one. No, this is the first time. So, but I think it kind of gets lost in the annals of history. But I think that match at Mania X7 is awesome. It's got a really goofy finish, but I really love that match.
That's one of the matches where I think I really became like an even bigger Triple H fan. And I've always been a Triple H fan. That's just been like always one of my favorite wrestlers. But I like when I think back as to some of the matches that made me be a Triple H fan, I think that was definitely one of them.
Chris Duncan says, now that Mandy Rose has been drafted to Raw, do you think that Heavy Machinery will follow? Or do you think they've taken the Mandy Otis storyline as far as they can go and they'll stay on SmackDown?
I think that they have taken it as far as they can go. Maybe they might revisit it in a couple of months. We'll get maybe, you know, a little moment between them and everybody will like be like, oh, remember, she was his peach. But I kind of think I don't think they're intending it to go any further. I think it was just around to give us a couple of LOLs.
And you know, I got some LOLs out of that storyline, Denise.
I did too. My eyes like bulged out when they did their first makeout session. I was like, whoa there.
I mean, my worry if Heavy Machinery go over to Raw is that Dolph Ziggler's also on Raw, and I don't want them to just rekindle that storyline with Mandy Rose again. I'm like, that was my instant worry. I was like, oh no, they could just do that storyline all over again. And I really don't want them to do that. But like, with Otis having the Money in the Bank lunchbox, it almost feels like he's better suited to be on Raw, because like with Roman and The Fiend and Braun as like the Universal Championship picture, Otis does not feel like he's part of that picture.
Otis doesn't feel like he's part of anything right now.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. What has he done since winning the briefcase? He's done nothing.
The most memorable thing that I can remember, and I don't even remember if it was afterwards, was when they had the pool segment where he comes out. And that's like literally all I can remember after that. I don't even know. That's terrible.
Dwayne the Gronk Johnson says, do you guys have a guilty wrestling pleasure? For me, I really enjoy watching WWE's awful reality shows like Total Bellas and Divas and Miz and Mrs. I actually saw a bit of Total Bellas. We were doing some testing with our editor to do like our new live streaming format. If people have seen our live streams, we've now got like fancy graphics and stuff and like transitions and whatnot. And so like, you know, Rich was kind of taking us through all of that. And to test it, we all watched the network at the same time to make sure our internets would sort of hold up. So I actually got to watch for the very first time a bit of Total Bellas, and it is a terrible TV show. And I got like 5 minutes into it. I was like, I cannot watch any more of this. I've got to put something else on the network.
I feel you. I mean, I never actually watched any of the shows. I may have watched like a couple of episodes of Total Divas, but it wasn't because I wanted to. It was just like, oh, it's on. Sure, I'll stick around and watch. But I haven't even seen Ms. and Mrs. I haven't seen any of that. So wait, is that your guilty pleasure though?
It's certainly not my guilty pleasure. No, I just wanted to just tell I don't like that show. It was basically just like, it was Nikki and Brie arguing because one of them had left some suitcases in front of the door. And there was like a 5 minute sequence of them having an argument about it.
Oh my God. That's reality TV for you. I hate like all of those shows. I don't know what my guilty pleasure is. Maybe my guilty pleasure would probably be like, oh my God, what's my guilty pleasure?
I'm going to say like it's WCW 2000, like 99-2000, when the wheels really fell off the wagon of that show. And like week in, week out, Nitro was just like bad. And it was like, oh my God, how are you getting worse? How is this show getting worse and worse, particularly in 2000? But it, like, I think from sort of like a history point of view, it's quite fun to watch this little car wreck happen in front of you. Like this very, very slow moving year-long car crash. So I think maybe that's my wrestling guilty pleasure, because I shouldn't like it because it killed a company. But at the same time, sometimes you watch it, you're like, oh man, I cannot believe that they had a false count anywhere match, a hardcore false count anywhere match, end in a count out. Like, how does this even happen? Like, how does that end up on television?
You're like, it's nonsense. So I think for me, it would be like maybe like if anybody comes out with like any really weird stipulation, like I will be like, what the heck are they even like for example, like even an eye for an eye match, like I'll talk all of this like smack, like, oh, I don't like it. But I think that deep down, the curiosity is what kind of gets me to be like, you know what? I'm secretly interested. Not like the serious version of me that takes wrestling serious, maybe not, but the other half of me that's like, you know what? I'm interested in what this madness is going to be. So I think interesting stipulations like that are somewhat my guilty pleasure. But also, I don't know if this is a good answer. A lot of people really hate Goldberg. And I get I get a kick out of being a Goldberg fan and pissing people off. That's a guilty pleasure. Like that people literally trashed me for that.
I love it. That's such a good answer. Magnus Bernstrom says, with the G1 starting up this Saturday, who do you hope is going to be the winner? And who has not wrestled in the G1 before, would you like to see in the tournament? I'd love to see Buddy Murphy, Daniel Bryan, and Cesaro in the G1. I think their wrestling styles suit the tournament and the New Japan style of wrestling. Yeah, I mean, those three names right there is a great, great shout. Yeah, just loving to see Claudio in a G1 tournament. Someone like Owens as well in a G1 tournament where he could just do so much character work with various different people, I think would also be really, really cool.
I would say, so in terms of winning the G1, I would go with Kota Ibushi because, I mean, that he is just so, like, beyond talented. I mean, like, crazy talented. Like, there's no words to describe his work. And I think that either in the final, I think that he should be the one to go off. And I know he won't necessarily take the bout from Naito, but I do think that, you know, having him, you know, like, get really hot and, you know, he's just, like, such a great worker that I think he would get really over really well in the chase of trying to get the bout from Naito. So I think he should be the one to win. And the finals, I think, might be Kota Ibushi versus either Sonata or maybe Kenta from the B block. So I don't know in terms of the B block, but A block, definitely Ibushi. And then in terms of someone that would come out in the G1 that hasn't, I'm going to go with Hiromu.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I would love to see that. And the fact that like we haven't is something that I feel like we need to see.
I mean, people pointed this out, like, when the blocks were announced. It's like, how is Takahashi not in this tournament, but Tai Chi is? Like, how has this happened? And I actually really much, I heavily agree with that as well. If you are interested in the G1, we're going to be covering many, 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 many of the nights of the G1 tournament over on Wrestle 2. Tempest of Quizzlemania fame is going to be hosting live stream reactions to that. Members of the WrestleTalk team are going to jump in and out of those streams when we can. And we're going to be doing a weekly podcast. Tempest is going to be doing a weekly podcast reviewing the sort of G1 as the weeks go on, as we lead into our climax final, which I'm really excited about, by the way. I'm also going to echo you with Kota Ibushi. I'm just looking at like the blocks again. God, it's a stacked old block. Like block A is nuts.
I renamed block A to block Denise. All right. Because every single guy, and I have the list up here. Ishii is literally my like bread and butter. Like when I see him that he's going to be in a match, I'm like, everybody leave me alone. Just let me focus on what's happening here. And then like same thing with Will Ospreay, who I love, and then Ibushi, who are my favorite. But literally everyone on that list is just like, holy. Yeah.
You got Ibushi, Jeff Cobb, Okada, Ishii, Ospreay, Takagai, Suzuki, Jay White, Takahashi. And then the odd man out in all of this is Tai Chi. It's like, why is Tai Chi in block A? But even like block B is no slouch. You got Tanahashi, Juice Robinson, Goto, Yano, Yoshihashi, Naito, Sanada, Zack Sabre, Bloody Jr., Kenta, and Evil. Like the Evil Sanada thing in block B is really, really interesting, given like, you know, the split of the tag team this year. I think it's going to be an excellent G1. My underdog for this, though, is Zach, because I'll always be a lover of Zack Sabre Jr. He is one of the nicest guys. I'm always going to love that man. It's not just because he is British, but I'm pulling for Zach to win.
All right, let me ask you a question. Are you a more, in terms of your fandom and what you prefer to watch in wrestling, do you prefer a Will Ospreay or a Zack Sabre Jr.? If you had to pick, like the style.
Oh, and I have seen those two wrestle like more times than I can count. Like I've seen them have more matches than I've had hot dinners. What do I like? Do you know what? My instant reaction is to say Ospreay. However, I then watch a Zack Sabre Jr. match and I'm like, oh God, it's good. Like, it's so, so great. What I love about Zack Sabre Jr. is that there was a period, like, British wrestling was always about, like, I'm going to show you the hold that I'm doing and how I'm twisting this man's arm. And then that transitioned over the years into just, like, I'm going to do this as quickly as possible because it looks cool to me to really, like, get into this hold. And Zach has gone all the way back to be like, no, 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 watch this man's arm. And now watch as I twist this man's arm and I twist it even further and I twist it in a position it's not supposed to be, because the crowd go, oh, oh, ooh. He's amazing. He's great.
Yeah, see, I feel like you're leaning more towards Zack Sabre Jr. I feel like you want to say Will Ospreay, but your heart is saying Zack Sabre Jr. It's just that when I think of, like, two very contrasting wrestlers, those are the ones that I think of. And I'm like, you either fall into this category or that category. Like, what is your fandom? Like, what is the style that you most connect to?
Yeah, I mean, I bloody love those two. Ishii, I've got to echo you with Ishii as well. Good. I saw his match with Keith Lee at Rev Pro. I've seen so many Ishii matches. Royal Quest last year, he was set to have one of the best matches with Kenta before Kenta got the concussion. Ishii is a beast that should be pushed way more in New Japan than he is. Nick Covello said, I have to ask you, Mr. WrestleTalk, why do you sound so much like Luke Owen? I know you mentioned being a super fan of the channel and him, but it takes a lot of dedication and talent to be able to do a spot-on vocal impression of him. What does your natural voice and accent sound like? Well, Nick, that's because Luke has got a non-regional British accent, and so have I. It's not that I sound like Luke Owen, we just sound like every non-regional British person, unfortunately. I wish I had a good accent. Unfortunately, I don't, so that's the sad thing. Flaming Clive says, excluding Flair and Becky Lynch, who should be the first woman to win a men's title? I think it should be Asuka, as she's faced like people like Tajiri in the past. So you're not allowed Flair and Becky. I mean, Asuka's the obvious answer for this one, I'm afraid. Like, I think Asuka winning a men's singles title is, like, right up there. I mean, obviously, you know, China's the first person. China's already done it. But I suppose in the modern era, yeah, I'm going to go with someone like Asuka.
I have to agree with that, because if it's not her, I can't see it being anyone else. If it's not Charlotte or Becky or even Asuka, but I definitely more so see it with obviously Charlotte and Becky.
Marcus Campbell, which wrestling wedding are you most looking forward to? Johnny Bravo and Rosemary's, or Kip and Penelope's? And on the off chance something goes wrong, as we know wrestling weddings never go wrong, what will interrupt the nuptials? For me personally, it's Kip and Penelope's, because my boy Miro is involved and I want to see what the best man is going to do.
We're going to have to throw down, Mr. Wrestle Talk. It's about to go down, because I am polar opposite here. I'm going to have to go with Johnny Bravo, because it's Impact Wrestling, so you know it's going to be wacky as hell. So because of that, I'm going to go with that one, because they've actually been building more interest, I think, to this wedding than maybe AEW has. And I know you're going to say, well, they introduced Miro. Okay, yeah, but what else besides Miro makes you care about this wedding?
Twitch. That's all I've got.
You know what? I'll take that answer. It's fair. But I think the Johnny Bravo Rosemary wedding, I think it will be outside of the box.
Oh, totally. I mean, and you're absolutely right. Because Impact are doing such wacky stuff at the moment. And, like, they are just, like, throwing things against the wall and just seeing what works. And actually, it turns out a lot of it's working. So I think that's going to be so much fun. But I think it's because I am, like, I'm such a Miro mark that I'm curious to see what's going to happen with him. So, yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to. But literally because Miro is involved. Ryan B. Bad said, I started thinking about this when we started to get appearances from the like of Ricky Starks and Eddie Kingston. We know that in the new extension deal AEW signed, they'll be getting a second show. My question is, do you think this second show should be a partnership with NWA and have it be Power, making it a legit second brand similar to the very first WWE brand split felt? Keep Dark as it is, but add NWA matches as well. I think that something like this could work out good for both companies, as they use each other as a feeder system to get talent over, and you could keep giving us crossover matches that we got with Thunder Rosa and Shida. The other half of my question is, when AEW gets its second show and a bigger roster, would you like to see AEW bring in a lightweight or cruiserweight title and treat it similar to how WCW did, actually pushing the division stars like Mysterio, Hubie, Psychosis, etc., etc.? So yeah, so the first question of this, do you think that AEW and NWA form a partnership so that the second show does become Power? What do you think of that one?
I'm going to say no. I don't like the idea whatsoever. Unfortunately, I'm going to sound like a fun sucker, party pooper. But I'm not a fan of NWA or Power. I'm not really into the style. I'm not really into the studio wrestling. It doesn't intrigue me. So unfortunately, I'm out in that sense. So given that, like, I like the talent, obviously, that are in there, but I'm just not particularly crazy about the style. So I just feel that there's not really as much benefit for AEW in doing this. And given that Tony Khan already said that the only person that he was looking forward to having on, or not looking forward, but the only person he was thinking about having come on to AEW was going to be Thunder Rosa. So I think that he's probably set on that. So I don't see a collaboration happening.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you because, like, as much as I, you know, got a bit of a kick out of the first episode of Power, which is actually the only one I've ever really seen. I've seen bits and pieces, you know, throughout. But, like, the studio setting is fun as a gimmick and sort of, like, you know, to make it feel like, hey, it's, you know, it's the 1970s all over again. That's fun. But if you put that on national television, that's, I don't think that's going to draw the audience that AEW are kind of looking for that will kind of benefit them in a way. Which means then all you're going to get is the NWA talent just doing AEW, which means all you're getting is the Raw and SmackDown split, which is that it's not really a brand split. It's just, it's the same show, but on different nights and with different people. So yeah, so I don't know for that one. On the other side of things, adding in a cruiserweight championship or a light heavyweight championship, or junior heavyweight championship, I'd imagine they'd call it. I'm against adding in new titles because I think after a while, title like the FTW title doesn't really feel like it means anything at the moment. Tony Khan said they've got plans for it, but it doesn't feel like it means anything at the moment. And you know, I think you want to get the TNT title over first before you just start adding in another title like that.
I agree with you. And there's no reason why guys like Jungle Boy or Darby Allin should not be going for the TNT title. They shouldn't have to bring in an extra belt for these guys. Like, no, have them go for that belt because that's something that would definitely benefit them a lot more. So yeah, I would not want that.
Frank Patello said, since we've had a wide variety of wrestlers with wacky gimmicks, is there a wrestler that you wish you could have seen be more serious? For example, Cornette tells the story of Eugene being one of the best wrestlers in OVW, but hated the way he was portrayed in WWE, and we never got to see the serious Eugene. A wrestler with a wacky gimmick that you wish you could have taken a bit seriously. Do you know who I'm actually going to... And this doesn't... He's not really a wacky gimmick, but I'd really like to see a serious Xavier Woods. Like, I'd really like to see like Woods got over because, like, he is this, you know, very charismatic guy and he is this very fun, but a serious Woods, I think it would be really fun to see.
I can definitely see that. I think for me, it would probably be, by the way, I used to really love Eugene. I was a lot younger then. So I think I liked his character a lot more, but I'm going to go with Santino Marella because he had a legit background in judo. So if anything, that only tells me that he would have done, you know, pretty great stuff with that. So I would go with Santino Marella.
That's a really good answer, actually. Alex Kirkman, this is a silly question, but I'm deadly serious, so please do think about it and give this a serious answer. In the future, do you think WrestleMania will ever take place on the moon? I know it's stupid, but honestly, can you see it happening? It's worth a discussion.
Okay, given that anything can happen in the WWE, you know what? I'm not going to be around in the year 3000, 4000. I hope that we're all still around and I hope wrestling is still a thing and people are still talking about that and we're in the moon. It's like a thing. Then you know what? I can definitely see it happening down the line. That's kind of like my train of thought there.
All right. I mean, earlier in this mailbag question, we were saying like, I mean, the time difference between the US and the UK is really bad, which means they're not going to do a big four pay-per-view over here. What's the time difference between the US and the moon? Like, it's gonna be...
Is that known? Is that even a possibility? I'm not a scientist. I don't know. I'm not even good at math.
Doesn't it take like days to get to the moon? I'm not an astronaut either. But like, surely, like, would they like do it days? Like, and then we would get it days later, but as a live feed?
I feel that you would need the live feed. What they can do, though, because doesn't NASA get a live feed of the moon? Do they? I don't know if they do. But if they do, have the audience. But I think the viewer's question, though, is with the fans in the moon, too, right? Or just WWE in the moon?
I've just Googled NASA live.
Because I'm thinking they can have, like, the audience at NASA. Oh, God. I have no idea. I'm just inventing stuff.
But I'm going to say yes, because if the option comes up, Vince will want to do it. Jobber JJ, my question is about Triple H if he takes over from Vince.
Wait, hold on. I need to say something because you said Vince and I'm like, wait, we're not going to be alive, but Vince definitely is.
He's going to outlive us all, Denise. Come on now. He can definitely outlive us all.
You're right. You know, billionaires do stuff. So
we're getting commercial flights to the moon. Like it's only a matter of time before WrestleMania is there.
Okay. You know what? You're right. Vince will outlive us.
Jobba JJ says, my question about Triple H, if he takes over from Vince, is he really the savior from the almost sunk ship? He'll be better that he's getting his... He is getting his ass kicked on Wednesday nights, especially in the key demos, and the booking has been questionable at times. So do you think he's going to be the savior? I mean, for starters, JJ, I would say that WWE is far from a sunk ship at the moment. Like, they've got money out the wazoo. Like, they are financially fine. Ratings may not be like where they once were 5 years ago, but I still think that the fact that they're making money, that they will be fine. And that's their new level of normal now for their ratings. But will Triple H be the savior that people think he can be?
I'm a big Triple H fan, so I'm going to say yes. But here's my smart answer, besides just me being a fan, is that I think that Triple H is the kind of person that would, if let's say he didn't know how to go about something, or maybe he didn't have a certain expertise in something, I think that he's the type of person that would seek out whoever had that expertise and surround himself around people that he trusts that could, you know, maybe give him a second set of eyes instead of just having people that are like, yes, sir, we'll do what you want. And then, you know, no one disagrees with your opinions. I don't see that with Triple H. I see him as being someone that's more open-minded. And yeah, maybe things that they might try in the future won't work, but I do think that he would be a lot more open-minded.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's already doing that. He's kind of already building his inner circle of guys that he's working with. He's kind of already building his team. So I think you're absolutely right in that he is the sort of guy who would be like, what do you think about this? Like, let's, you know, go over to Jeremy Borash and be like, you with your 30 years of experience, what do you think about this? You know, going over to Shawn Michaels and being like, what do you think about this? I think there would be a much more collaborative process, certainly internally, as opposed to, you know, because Vince is the be all and end all of just like, he shows up to a show 2 hours before it airs and be like, I'm tearing up the script and I'm writing it myself. I think Triple H will be more hands-on with that and will work with the writers throughout the week so that Raw makes sense by the time it gets there, as opposed to being rewritten hours before the show airs. That's what I'd like to think anyway. Callum says, when Chris Jericho retires, what should be his last match? And would you have him as a heel or a face? For me, it should be against Sammy Guevara, putting over so he can put over a young star and then go into the main event as a top heel. And Jericho should be a face so we can actually cheer him in AEW.
Okay. So, given, like, we were just talking about aging and all of that, I don't see Chris Jericho retiring anytime soon, especially the way that he's working right now. I feel like he still has got a good 10, 15, 20 years, however long he chooses to go. So I think that the person that he retires against right now isn't probably even in wrestling school yet. I definitely think, obviously, it's going to have to be a young guy that he puts over with Jericho as a heel. But whoever his retiree person is, I don't even think they're in wrestling right now, because that's how far out I think he's going to be in this business for.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And actually, I'm going to give a much lamer answer, because like, Callum has got really the smart answer here, which is you put over the younger talent. You said it as well. You bring in a new star that's not even in wrestling school yet, and you put that person over. But I'm an old curmudgeonly man, so I'm going to say it's Lance Storm. He's going to have his last match against Lance Storm. He had his first match against him. He'll have his last match against him, and they'll go out on a high, and I think they'll be able to do it brilliantly. Penultimately, Matthew Makovsky says, this is my very first mailbag question.
question. So I'm very excited. Thank you very much, Matthew. I love the fantasy booking. So I want to ask, Adam said his favorite match of all time is Bryan versus Lesnar, which I consider to be a David versus Goliath match. I'm curious, what David versus Goliath match where the monstrous man faces a much smaller amazing star is your favorite? Could be any brand in WWE. My match, or actually, you know, or fantasy booking, my match would be Keith Lee versus AJ Styles, or maybe Brock Lesnar versus Nakamura and Cesaro.
So, okay, the question is our favorite, okay.
Like your dream David versus Goliath match.
Oh, so not one that's already happened, like a dream one. Okay. Honestly, anybody versus Rey Mysterio. Yeah. Like any big guy. I don't know if I have like a specific big guy, but anybody versus Rey Mysterio is my answer.
Keith Lee versus Mysterio would be a lot of fun. That'd be really, really good. And they're on the same brand, so we can make that happen.
You just see Rey fly.
I mean, mine is a match that we should have had. I mean, we technically did get it, but not the way that I wanted it to be, which is Brock Lesnar versus Ricochet. Like, I think that Ricochet is great around big guys, and Brock Lesnar is brilliant around smaller guys. And I think that he knows how to work those matches really smartly, but they just booked Ricochet to just get completely squashed by him. I'd like to see a competitive match between Lesnar and Ricochet. I think that would be so, so awesome.
But that's what I was actually going to say. Correction. He could have a great match if he likes the guy and is willing to give him a great match. You know, oh God, when it was his WrestleMania match in Dallas against Dean Ambrose, you know, that was the match I was most looking forward to on the card. And boy, that all went downhill.
Same here, dude. Like, I was so ready for that match. I was like, you know what? The booking has sucked leading into this. It's been dumb, but I don't care. This is Dean Ambrose versus Brock Lesnar, and that match sucked.
Yes.
Matthew continues, the other thing I'm curious about is the matches for TakeOver taking place on October 4th, and if you've got any predictions for Full Gear.
All right, so for TakeOver, I don't think I have any predictions, but for Full Gear, I'm going to go with two options. So I'm thinking either Omega Moxley, sort of, I know they did it last year, but it could sort of be like a throwback, like, okay, we're back to this. Like, I think that would be kind of cool. Or given Pac's situation, because I don't know what his travel situation dilemma is right now, but let's say all that's cleared away, I think Pac Moxley might be a good option as well.
I'm actually going to go with Moxley Omega as well. Because Omega's telling the storyline, he's going back into the singles division. And I think you can really play off the fact that it is 1 year that they had their Full Gear match, which was unsanctioned. So now they can have a sanctioned match, and this time it's for the title. I'd really like to see that. I think that'd be really, really great. As for TakeOver, I think it could be Balor Ciampa. I really do think we could get that. To be honest, the one thing I'm hoping for TakeOver is that Kushida gets on the card, because Kushida has been signed with NXT since April 2019 and has not had a TakeOver match yet. How has that happened?
I don't have any rhyme or reasoning as to why.
And lastly, from Chris Gardner, what has been the best segment from WWE pay-per-view where the crowd have taken over? For example, after WrestleMania 33, where they booed Roman for 146 hours and he just stood there and smiled. And after WrestleMania 34, when Rollins won the IC title. It's always great to see wrestlers interact with a hot crowd, and the noise they make makes everything feel bigger to me. Thanks, Chris Gardner. I think it's anything to do with Daniel Bryan stuff, really. It was when they were just like chanting for Daniel Bryan during segments where they didn't really want it to happen, or when they were really behind Zack Ryder and they were chanting for Ryder during segments where they didn't want him on the show. I can't think of a specific one, though. Actually, no. Do you know what? I have got one. Do you remember when Owens and Elias, I don't know where they were, but they made some reference to their local sports team and the crowd went nuclear?
Why do I feel like that usually happens in LA? But that may just be me. It might not have happened in LA, but so much of that always happens at the LA shows, where like they always come up with like a Lakers joke or something. But it kind of happens at like every show, because it's like the easiest way to get some cheap heat. So
it was, I just Googled it. It was Seattle.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah. So yeah, that was my favorite one, because like that, the heat they got was so much that they had to effectively stop the segment they were doing, bring the lights up to address the fact that this crowd were going absolutely nuclear because they made a joke about, I'm going to say football, but it might have been baseball.
Oh man, I think mine would probably be Rock Hogan, WrestleMania 18, where the crowd essentially like completely went bananas for Hogan and just did not, you know, it's The Rock and they necessarily didn't have the greatest reaction for The Rock. And I think even because, okay, so WrestleMania 18 was Toronto, but then the night after they did Montreal, and there, I think it got to the point where they were even booing The Rock. And even so, I think afterwards, it wasn't until Hogan was like, hey, The Rock's good. Like, he's good. And then people eventually started, you know, cheering for him again. But it got to the point where I was like, you know, what's going to happen here with The Rock? So I'm going to go with that one because I think the crowd just completely turned on Rock and we're just like, Hogan, he's a legend. He's the babyface, biggest babyface on the planet, whatever.
Totally. It was like, it was Hogan was back in the WWF, and like it turned out that there were all of these WWF fans that weren't watching WCW and were just excited to see Hogan was back in WWF. And like they were like, I don't care if he's part of the NWO. I don't care if he's running over The Rock. It's Hogan. So like when they're in Toronto and this Toronto crowd is like cheering him as this ultimate baby face, to the point where like they had to completely change everything. Like, you know, they told the story that like for Raw the following night, he didn't have his like red and yellow gear, so they had to get the red and yellow gear like shipped over to them so that he could wear that for the following night, because they were like, oh, turns out Hogan's a babyface, and The Rock is not the babyface in this storyline.
it's crazy, like looking, like thinking about how things have gone now, like I don't know if that would have necessarily happened in 2020, but you know what, WrestleMania 18, it worked out, and I thought that was a pretty interesting moment.
Denise, I need to talk to you about Kit Kats, because on your Fightful show said that you're not a fan of Kit Kats. You are, although I do agree with you. I think Whispers are ace. Is it Whisper that you said you
were? No, really like? Milky Way. I don't know. What Milky are Whispers? Way. I've never heard of Whispers.
That's what I was going to ask, because, you know, you had this discussion with Luke about this UK food package that you'd got, which was definitely absolutely 100% not like UK based stuff. And we were going to send you across a care package of stuff you can only get here. And that was going to be one of my questions, is do you get Whispers over there?
No.
I think Milky Ways are nice, but come on, man. Kit Kats are great. You just don't like the wafer?
No, I don't like it. It grosses me out. Like when I bite it and I'm like, ugh. Like I just make that like, it doesn't please me. Candy should please you. And Kit Kat does not do it for me. So if I ever get like a candy bag at a birthday party or Halloween trick-or-treating, I look at my pumpkin, like I'll go around and swap candies. I'll be like, who wants the Kit Kat? And you know what I do love though, and I always swap my Kit Kats for, because nobody loves this chocolate, I forgot to mention this on the podcast, Tootsie Rolls are heaven and nobody likes them, and I swap them all the time with people.
Tootsie Roll is the only, I've only ever heard of it because it's been mentioned in films. We don't get them here in the UK, so I have no idea what a Tootsie Roll is like. I was going to ask you, on the subject of Kit Kats, do you get the variations of Kit Kats? Do you get the chunky ones?
I just get the regular kind. I didn't even realize there was chunky ones.
Dude, like they're so big, like there's massive versions. It's basically just like one bar of Kit Kat, but it's
chunky. You know what? I think I have seen that, but because it's Kit Kat, I don't even bother to look any further. But you know what I do like to get, though? During Easter time, the Reese's Pieces egg.
Yes.
That one. Yeah. Oh, I love that one. And I also love the Reese's Pieces Buttercups, but the white chocolate version. Oh, because I love white chocolate. Like, I'm the person that could just get, like, a ball of white chocolate by itself and just, like, eat it like that because it's so good. But Kit Kats are horrible.
I love
them. They're horrible. What's your favorite, though?
My favorite chocolate bar. What's my favorite chocolate bar? Okay. So there's a Cadbury's one called a Boost. So it's got caramel in it and like little bits of biscuit. And it's absolutely delicious. That or a Double Decker, which is, it's also a Cadbury one. I'm going to see if I can find.
I was going to say, I haven't heard of any of these. I was expecting like a Hershey's, a Snickers.
Oh, God, no. Hershey's disgusting. Like Hershey Kisses, like they are gross. They taste like feet.
Hershey's Kisses taste like feet.
Oh, they're gross. They're so disgusting.
No.
Yeah,
they're so good.
No, Denise, they're disgusting, man.
I would risk all of my teeth just for Hershey's Kisses. I just like throw them in there because they're so good. And like Hershey's almonds is everything. Oh no, I'm a Hershey's girl. Hershey's over Kit Kat.
Like, there was that's the new hashtag. There was a running trend that in the offices that I worked in over the years, where like someone would come back from America and they'd bring back American treats and stuff, and we'd all be like, oh, look, at some American treats. Everyone would always bring back Hershey's Kisses, and I've never been in an office that liked them. Every single person who eats them is like, this is disgusting, it's absolutely foul. I've never met a single person who is not American who likes Hershey's Kisses.
So maybe it's like a UK thing, because Hershey's Kisses are amazing. And they even do like for Valentine's, you can get like the pink and the white, and they mesh the colors and it's so pretty. And they even have the swirl. The swirl is really great. Oh my God. Like, I will fight somebody for a Hershey's Kisses. I'll be like, give me your Hershey's Kisses. I'll eat them all.
Because we really only got Reese's Buttercups here in the last 5 to 10 years, I want to say. Like, they really made an impact here in the UK. Like, they come in the little 3-pack, and they are delightful.
You get the 3-pack?
Oh, yeah, we get the 3-pack. So you guys only get 2, right?
We only get 2, and then there's the king size, which I think is 4, but it's either the 2 or the 4. There's no 3-pack for us, at least not that I know of. But we do get more options, though, because we get, like, the Reese's Pieces, like, the little tiny, tiny ones, which are really good.
The M&M ones, yeah.
Yes, those. And then we get the egg, and then the actual, like, the little cup. So I guess we have options, but I don't get the 3-1.
Yeah, no. Oh, the 3-1's awkward, because if you buy it, like, when me and my wife would get one, it's like, well, who does the third go to? Because I get one, you get one. It's not easy to snap in half, Denise. Come on,
That's true.
It's not a clean break, isn't it? It's like a Kit Kat break. Kit Kats you can easily break.
Yeah, break them and put them in the trash because they're awful, honestly. But I mean, I don't know. I just feel like Reese's is better. Like, I don't mind. I wouldn't mind cutting it in half and sharing. And even their commercials. When I see their commercials, I'm like, oh, God, that's the only thing that I can see in a commercial and be like, God, I wish I was at the store right now buying a Reese's Pieces.
I'm going to put a call out to our UK viewers, UK listeners, rather, to send in their favorite, like, British snacks so that we can get together this care package to send across to you. Because
please,
I was thinking,
do.
Okay, so... crisps in terms like Monster Munch. Do you guys get Monster Munch?
No, I don't know what that is. Okay. But it sounds like, is it cheese puffs? Because it sounds like cheese puffs.
They're like puffy, but they're pickled onion flavor.
Oh, pickled onion. I don't do pickled onion, but you know what? Hey, I'm willing to try. I'm a sport. I'll try.
Absolutely. So support@wrestletalk.com. Send us in your favorite UK only snacks so we can send Denise a proper UK delivery of snacks that you can do as an unboxing video on Instant Culture. Denise, what do you got planned for the weekend before I let you go?
Let me think. Tomorrow, Friday, I'll be editing all day and then watching SmackDown. And then Saturday, I will be probably editing all day too. And then Sunday, I'm looking what's going on. Sunday, I don't have anything planned. So that'll kind of be like my relaxation day. I do want to watch Ratched on Netflix with Sarah Paulson. It's like series.
Yeah, the spinoff from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, so I do want to watch that. And then kind of, I feel like I'm a little bit behind right now in some TV shows that I need to catch up on. So I need to see what's new and, you know, just start watching stuff, because I fell behind like last month. I don't think I watched as many shows as I normally do.
Oh, dude, like, I really need to watch The Mandalorian, because they now released the trailer for the second series and I've not even seen the first one yet. So, like, I need to get onto that before I see the trailer and it starts spoiling things for me. Like,
it's
bad enough that I know that Sasha Banks is in it. Like, I need to catch up on The Mandalorian at some point.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, sounds good. But anyway, Denise, where can people find you on the old social medias? Plug it one more time.
Twitter and Instagram @_DeniseSalcedo and then YouTube.com/DeniseSalcedo.
You did that way better this time than you did in the YouTube version of this, which you completely tripped over.
Oh my God. I was like, duh, who? Like, I don't even know my own name. YouTube is what now? I was speaking nonsense. Like, people are going to see that and be like, really? She's a host. She's horrible. Like, I'm not going to put that on my reel.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. Pete and Randy will be doing the SmackDown review. And on Monday, we'll be getting the first bit of our G1 coverage with Tempest, which I'm really, really looking forward to. But until then, thank you all so much for listening. Take care. I love you. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.